Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. As you know, we're in kind of in the middle of a conversation I had with a John Gentry, who is looking to become governor of Tennessee. And he's definitely got his mind in the right spot in understanding, you know, one of the most important tools in the Constitution, the right of petition. And so we want to dive more into that as well. I believe that he has, you know, a really good grasp on some things that really need to be done and so forth. And it's not that any of us have perfect vision, because I can tell you, as I started down this path in 2011 with my book and talking about Republic Review and, you know, getting my father engaged and so forth prior to his death. Anyway, what we're looking at are people that are recognizing just the dire straits that we're in. And this is what I am banking on you to do. I'm banking on you to step up. I am banking on everybody to fill those spots at your county position, your state legislative positions. There's thousands of spots, folks, and we have thousands of listeners. We need you. And I don't want you to think, when we come back, we're going to go straight into the interview. We'll go into music, then back into the interview, and then I will do a one-minute wrap-up. So I want you to really start thinking about what do you need to do and what can you do. And don't worry about your past mistakes. Don't let anything like that keep you from serving. Anyway, we will be right back with the conversation with John Gentry after this.
Until the people will come and stand by me and say, we are going to restore the right of petition. Government is going to abide by the Constitution. Until the people at large do that, they are unfit to exercise the privileges of free men. Their most powerful constitutional right, the foundation of this republic, the everything that this republic was founded on has been stripped from us, and they are laughing at us.
Well, so if I can interject real quick, I wouldn't go that far. I believe that have you ever seen the movie, because I like using this metaphor, have you seen The Lord of the Rings, the movie The Lord of the Rings?
Many times. I've read the book 5 times.
Okay, good. So you understand when Gandalf goes into Rohan and when King Rohan is under this spell, did King Rohan not have a cavalry? Did he not have men that would be willing to fight? Did he not have a kingdom? He was under the full belief by the spell that he was dying, that his kingdom was lost, that all was lost because he was under a spell. America is under a spell. We still possess all of the authority and power as citizens, as sovereign states. We have everything we need to restore this. What we have to do is we have to break the spell that the people and the states are under. And it may be by, you know, one epiphany at a time. Because obviously you've had your epiphany, right?
It's not a spell. It's a coma.
Well, but my point is that we still have at our disposal the armament and the weaponry of the Constitution. We still have these things available to us.
Oh, and I've spoken this when I speak publicly. I do this almost every time, but the Tennessee Constitution is my shield and armor, and the Declaration of my Rights is my sword. And I'm armed for battle, and I'm going to war, and who's going to come with me?
There we go.
I have to. I'll fight by myself, and I have been.
So the reason I'm injecting is, I know you didn't listen to my show this week, but I kind of prepped everything for, you know, this conversation. And so what I basically had been kind of giving people a historical perspective of how we've gotten into this position. Our country hasn't lost itself. We have been perverted and indoctrinated into believing that going out and protesting is a right. And we have been, the fact of petitioning has been completely obfuscated. It has been hidden from us so that we do not understand that as a birthright, you know, just in the essence of being a U.S. citizen, we have the ability to do these things. And all we have to do is take that stand. All we have to do is, just like King Rohan, take back my kingdom. Take the step of saying, I am the king. And anyway.
And it does it, honestly. Yes. It does not even require taking up arms. It only requires coming together and getting loud and expressing our will to the legislature.
Yes, yes, yes.
We don't even have to pick up arms.
Right, right.
We just have to unite. You say it's a spell. It's a coma.
Regardless of what the words, vernacular, whatever that we're using, I agree with you. I agree that the First Amendment petition
It's important to understand, you know, what kind of coma this is. It's apathy. I don't care. It's distraction. Let's watch sports and movies. And it's oppression of knowledge. It's ignorance.
Well, and then there's the nefarious side to this. Those people who are actually doing this so that they can gain ground and actually subvert our government from underneath us and actually convert it into a communist government. All unconstitutional, all, you know,
It's not communist, it's oligarchy.
Well, so I believe their end game is to create a statism form of government where the state controls everything. And so that would be a communist form of government, whether that be socialist or full-fledged communism. I don't know, but I do know it's statism. It falls under...
I've been involved a lot here in the Tennessee government, and it's an oligarchy of a few people that probably on one hand, but you count.
Yeah, yeah. So I believe that the end state, the end government that we will be pushed into, the states will actually lose all of their powers. They will be basically reduced to administrative functions, anyway, but let me change the subject here real quick, if I could.
I want to talk about the solutions. I mean, we all know the problems out there. I want to talk solutions.
Yeah, so let me, because I want to do that as well. And this next turn I have, I'm not sure how much you understand common law grand juries. Do you understand common law? I'm sure you do, because common law is the declared law of the land in every state except for one, and that's an unconstitutional declaration as of the 14th Amendment.
But I understand. I very much understand what common law is, and I have an idea about grand juries. The problem is I don't have knowledge on how to implement and use that. You know, with our corrupt court system and our corrupt government.
Well, do you understand how the state's broken down into counties, right? And each county seat actually has the ability to create a common law grand jury.
Sure.
And so, getting back to the solution, because this is why, you know, looking at the two teeth that I've mentioned before, petitioning and common law grand juries. You know, going to the state is good, and it's good press. You get, you know, a lot of visibility. More people see you up there. But going into these dark red counties, 9 times out of 10, the dark red counties in every state are probably the least populated, but they're the most conservative, and they're the most probably the, you know, God-fearing people and good, righteous people, right? And so you could probably get, and so one of the things that we're trying to do is create this awareness of, one, the First Amendment petition, using the First Amendment petition in these dark red counties to start demanding that they start abiding by the Constitution and start, you know, implementing very specific things in going to the state, having your county commissioners actually going and in your behalf petitioning the state in a remonstrance that they do their doggone job. Now, if they do that, and obviously the state's still going to try to ignore them, but what we want to do is we want to get a instead of a number of people, I believe that we would have, if we had a number of or a good percentage of counties that would take this stand and start using both the First Amendment petitions and then forming common law grand juries. So common law grand juries can provide two different outputs. One can be an indictment, and the other can be a declaration. And a declaration, back in the Mosaic time, this common law grand jury, or the, you know, the ancient form of this, was where the people basically looked at the laws of God and basically said the laws of God are being violated as they've been instructed, or based on all the facts and the analysis that they've come up with the scriptures, the guidance, and everything else. And you can do the same thing with the Constitution in determining how the state or the state legislatures, the jurists, and so forth have violated the laws of the state and the Constitution itself. And so I'm looking at trying to utilize both teeth, both the petitioning and driving the petitioning to forming common law grand juries so that we actually start having declarations. And one of the first things, and I just want to put this on the table for you to think about and ruminate, I think the very first challenge that has to be put on the table is the Constitution itself. What Constitution are we to recognize? Are we to recognize this annotated Constitution that has no ties whatsoever to the sovereignty of the states and to the actual compact that the states have entered? Or do we go and look and identify that the organic Constitution is the only Constitution that we should be adhering to and following? And then in so doing, and this is, I think I might have mentioned this, that I'm trying to get the Constitution Party and every constitutional organization, including the John Birch Society, including even Hillsdale College, anybody out there that claims to be a champion for the Constitution, bringing everybody to the table and canonizing the Constitution. And what I mean by that is going through each section or each article and subsection of the Constitution and identifying how each of these lines, whether it be the Necessary and Proper Clause, whether it be the General Defense of Welfare Clause, or the preamble of Section 8, all of these clauses is how they were defined through the ratification debates, because those are legally termed, those are legal terms and legal definitions as they were describing to the state for them to accept this compact. And so by providing all of this clarity, we now take away any interpretation for a judge or for a politician or a lawyer or anybody to say, well, this is what I think it means. Well, this is what Madison said it meant, and Marshall and Iredell and Wilson and all these other people. Because, you know, when you stack up every single clarity of that clause, you take away any type of ambiguity of what the Necessary and Proper Clause means. Does that make sense?
That is absolutely correct. So, you know, take for example, you know, Tennessee Constitution has a right to instruct. And I think on that spreadsheet I sent you, there's like either 13 or 16 states have a right to instruct their representatives. Well, you know, and what does that mean? And, you know, actually, I think there's like no supporting authority in the courts about the right to instruct. It has been so oppressed, nobody's even argued that right. But, you know, in the United States Congress, the first congressional session, 1789, when they're ratifying the Bill of Rights, they're debating like what that right means. When you read the transcripts of the congressional debate, it's a committee of the whole discussing the right to instruct. You can have no misunderstanding what that right means. And what it means is that people literally have a right to go to their representatives, either individually or as a group of citizens, and say, I'm instructing you to do this. And that creates an obligation on the part of the entire House, the entire legislative body, not that member you go instruct. It's the entire legislative body now has a duty to consider, to, you know, to first hear those instructions. The entire body has to hear those instructions. And once they hear them, they have to deliberate, they have to consider, and then they have to decide, they have to vote yes or no on whether they're going to obey those instructions or not.
Right.
That's what that, and that could not be more clear than going back and reading what the founders were talking about when they discussed whether they were going to include that right or not in the federal constitution. And they had those discussions, you know, about many of the rights that are in there, about what, you know, when Madison brought in the Bill of Rights, there was about 200 suggestions from states about what rights to include in the federal Bill of Rights. And Madison, I think, kind of whittled those down, you know, to the 10 amendments, well, more than the 10 amendments, but they had discussions about all of them from that. You know, when I talk about solutions here, it is not going to come from government. It is not. It is absolutely not going to come from government. It's only going to come from the people. And so the only way that we're going to preserve our American way of life and defend our constitutions is if the people as a whole do that. And the only way that is going to happen is we're going to have to educate a lot of citizens, and we're going to have to get a lot of citizens together to unite on something. And that is extremely hard. And especially, you know, if you're talking about corruption, the only way that you can talk about corruption and advertise about it is if you're a candidate for office, which is exactly why I became a candidate, is because now I can advertise and I can use words like corruption, and I can point fingers and name names about that I think are corrupt, as long as I can back it up with evidence. And there's nothing they can do about it because I'm protected by federal election law. So with that, now I can advertise. And so, you know, for your audience out there, you know, that you recognize that so many things are wrong in our republic, that government is not just broken, government is corrupt, and they're coming to take our freedom, they're coming to extort our money, and if we don't do something about it, our children are going to pay a heavy price, and their children are going to pay a heavier price, and it's going to be far worse than when we declared independence, because there's tens of thousands that are already suffering the same tyranny that we suffered under the British Crown. That's already happening today.
Yes.
And it's so, you know, if your listeners are out there, like, you know, what can we do about this? Run for office. Who cares about winning? You know, I don't care if I win and get put in office. What I care about is educating my citizens and waking them up.
Well, so let me kind of tell you where we're at as far as Reclaiming the Republic radio show and my listeners. I constantly tell them to get involved. I constantly give them what I call marketing shows. When I kind of go through the news and show them just how bad things are, I go, what's it going to take? I mean, do you really think things are getting better? And you know, I just keep on providing more and more glimpses as how these things are spinning further and further out of control. And basically say, you know, the only way we're going to stop this progress and actually retard it and reclaim this republic is by people standing up. Now, to be very accurate on this, we do not need a majority. They fought the Revolutionary War with a very small percentage of people contributing to the effort, as you know.
My goal is to cause outrage in 4% of the people here in Tennessee. And I believe that if I can get 4% outraged to the point of taking action with me, not violent action.
Right. Got it.
Getting wild. That's, you know, there's 6.8 million people, Tennesseans. So, you know, 600,000, 10%, or well, 680,000 is 10%. So, 340,000 people, you know, that's what I need, about 300,000 or 400,000 people that are outraged and taking action. So, you know, I at the peak of my last campaign, I was reaching 1.2 million people. So I'm hitting 1.2 million screens per month, and I was getting about 60,000 engagements. And I accomplished that spending between $100 and $300 a month in social media advertising. So I was actually 10% of the way there.
Yes.
There, you know, getting that 300, 400,000 people outraged. I was about 10% of the way there. It was 60,000. So I'll just keep, you know, I'm just going to keep pushing it.
So let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of a slate? Do you know what a slate is?
A slate?
Yes.
Well, generally, but I'm not sure how you're referring to it.
Okay, so a slate is usually when you come up, like in a party, the party tries to create a slate of candidates, a slate of delegates that are kind of vetted, that all have a like-minded, and basically what you do is you create a campaign and a paradigm that these are the defenders. These are the guys that we need to do this very specific job. And so I'm just kind of referring to what a slate is. Now, if you look at what you're doing in your campaign, if we created a cadre, a battalion, a division of candidates throughout the state of Tennessee that all got their feet firmly grasped on this concept of reclaiming the republic and enforcing and getting back the people's rights and establishing what I would call a Bill of Rights for the 21st century, and moving people and moving government back into its priorities of protecting life and property instead of confiscating property and oppressing people. And so anyway, my point is that when you create a body of people, see, this is what we did in Wyoming. I think I might have told you that we were actually able to turn something like 17 seats in the state of Wyoming from rhinos, and we had challengers that primaried out these rhinos, and these guys actually moved forward. We even had one independent who actually unseated the rhino in the general election to actually take claim, and this person was supporting the Republic Review, you know, concept of, you know, holding the federal government accountable and getting the state and all government into full compliance of the Constitution. Anyway, my point, and I'm not trying to really try to get this convoluted, because it doesn't take, you know, a really complex battle strategy in getting people to come together. But I do believe that you would probably be, you know, there's a synergy, there's a symbiosis that when people start working together, they can actually do better things, bigger things, move heavier objects, and actually succeed. And so I want to see Tennessee. I'd like to see you succeed. I'd like to see Tennessee and the state house go shifting towards the Constitution and away from, you know, the paradigm that they're untouchable, that they're above the law, and that they are the elitist of society.
Well, here's, you know, this is a campaign promise that I'm making now. I can find that on the screen. The campaign promise I'm making is put me in office as governor, and I guarantee term limits, not just here in Tennessee, but in the United States Congress. And I'm not just going to say, you know, because the incumbent governor right now, that was one of his top things, term limits. But he hasn't done anything. Governor Bill Lee I haven't heard a peep out of his mouth about getting term limits in place. But what I'm going to do is I'm telling the people, this is how I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to get term limits here. And when we do it here in Tennessee, then we're going to set the example, and we're going to lead the entire nation in putting term limits in place in the United States Congress and getting rid of these Schumers and Paluzzis, as well as all, you know, all of them that have been in there as career politicians, they got to go. It's the root of the corruption, you know, these career politicians. So how I'm going to do this is I'm going to assert the right of the people to remonstrate on behalf of the people. And as governor, I will have the reach of the entire state of people. I'll do a public address, and I will make a big deal about it, and I'll get every Tennessean tuning in at the same time. And I'm going to say, I want you to go to this website. I want you to electronically sign a memorial and remonstrance that we are demanding term limits here in Tennessee as a constitutional amendment, constitution. When we do that, I'm going to get all the people from Tennessee, because every poll out there about term limits, these are nationwide polls, 80 to 82% of citizens, and it doesn't matter, male, female, black, white, you know, race, gender, nothing matters. Party affiliation, Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. 82% of us want term limits. It is, and then there's the 10% don't know. And I think for the 10%, if you explain to them what's going on, they would want term limits too. So, and Tennessee being a red state here, I think it's probably going to be closer to 95% of the people in Tennessee that are voting citizens are going to want term limits. So, let's go back and listen to what the founders said back in 1789 about the right to instruct and the sovereignty presiding in the people as a whole. This was Representative Gerry talking about whether to include the right to instruct in the Federal Bill of Rights, which they didn't, but they talked about it, putting the right to instruct in the Federal Bill of Rights. And he said, now though, I do not believe the amendment could bind the representatives to obey the instructions. Yet I think the people have a right both to instruct and bind them. Do gentlemen concede that on any occasion instructions would be so general as to proceed from all the constituents? If they do, it is the sovereign will. For gentlemen will not contend that the sovereign will presides in the legislature. The friends and patrons of this Constitution have always declared that sovereignty resides in the people and that they do not part with it on any occasion. So to say sovereignty vests in the people and that they do not have a right to instruct and control their representatives is absurd to the last degree. So if I, as governor, address the General Assembly, and I give my solemn oath before the people that I will do that, and I will exercise the executive power in the Tennessee Constitution, the governor can convene the General Assembly, saying, all senators, representatives, come on down to the Capitol. I'm going to address the body, and I'm going to express the sovereign will of the people. And if they vote against term limits and they do not want to move forward with a constitutional amendment, they have just violated their oath of office, because the Tennessee Constitution says power is inherent in the people. Sovereignty resides in the people. And if 95% of the people want term limits, that's the sovereign will of the people. And for a representative to say no is suggesting that sovereignty resides in the legislative houses, which it does not, and the people do not part with that. And I will haul them out of office. I'll find a way as governor to exercise executive power to enforce the law that they will rule, or that they will vote according to the will of the people, that they will obey those instructions.
So without, if I could, I understand your promise and I understand your campaign. But what I'd rather do is I'd rather actually, because we could go into 20, 30, if not 40 minutes or as much read and detail on each of these campaign issues. And I would much rather have a sidebar with you to talk about getting organized and trying to create a group of people that are working together that would, you know, present a what I believe is an irrefutable case to the people of Tennessee and all of the other great states in the United States on a plan of getting this government back under their control. And so, that would be, like I said, a sidebar, so that we could kind of, you know, put it on the table, you know, and everybody has a right to say, I don't want to be a part of that.
That's why I'm here with you. Yeah. I don't know everything. You intrigued me talking about doing a Republic review. So, you know, I actually came here tonight thinking I was going to learn from you more.
No, and so actually, we'll get into that. But bottom line is that what I truly believe that you have to understand the fundamentals, such as the right of petition. You have to understand the power of a common law grand jury and the importance of common law, because common law is actually galvanized in our Constitution. See, one of the things that I learned in the ratification debates that really upset a lot of the anti-federalists was that common law was not a part of the Constitution. The Bill of Rights was not a part of the Constitution, as you know. They ratified this Constitution based on an enumerated Constitution that the federal government was delegated only these powers and these powers alone. And if it wasn't delegated, they couldn't mess with it. And I think I may have expressed to you that it is my opinion and a lot of other people that look at the Bill of Rights as more of an hindrance or a problem. But the beautiful thing about the Bill of Rights was that when we really needed it towards at the end of the Civil War, we had something in place that allowed us to basically flip-flop those individual privileges and immunities out to the states to basically say, now state governments can't do this to these people or to the citizens of the United States. And so it actually then gave the Bill of Rights, I think, a whole new purpose and meaning in our everyday lives.
But I would say, you know, that you talk about the 14th Amendment, that the states can't infringe on rights.
Right.
And that's a distraction, because the state constitutions far better protect the rights than the Bill of Rights. Far better. So, for example, the First Amendment, the United States Constitution, says that we have freedom of speech. That's all it says. Citizens have a right to freedom of speech. Shall not be infringed. Freedom of speech. That's it. Tennessee Constitution, Article 1, Section 19, is that every citizen has a right to examine the proceedings of any branch or officer. That's powerful. We have a right to examine the proceedings of any branch or officer of government. And it is an invaluable right of every citizen to speak, print, or write on any subject their thoughts and opinions. Thoughts and opinions, not just facts, just what your opinion is,
right,
of something. That is an invaluable right to express your opinion. That's way better than you got a freedom of speech. And it goes on and it says that in the case of libel against an official or men in public capacity, evidence may be given. And in a case of libel, the jury will determine the law and the facts. That's incredible. The jury is not just determining the facts. They're determining the law according to the Tennessee Constitution.
Right.
So, you know, when you talk about, you know, this federal Bill of Rights protecting rights, this is big to my work, is people have got to start looking at their state constitutions.
Absolutely. I and I'm not arguing with you, but I will say this, that you happen to be in a state that, you know, was in the shadows of Jefferson and Madison, that actually took its statehood, that received its Enabling Act, in 1796, 1795, something like that, and you guys created your Constitution and then we became a state in 1796. So, I mean, you were born while everybody had understood the taste of parchment and the taste of individual liberty and sovereignty. If you go on through the history of the United States and you start looking at like Oklahoma. Now, I point out to Oklahoma because Oklahoma, shoot, that was an early state, wasn't it? It was created and it was utilized as a state, but it never obtained statehood until 1907. Most people don't know that, wow, Oklahoma was around that long before it became a state? Yes. And So when you look at Oklahoma's constitution, or you look at some of these older state constitutions, they're not as verbose. They're not as protective because many of those things were lost. As a matter of fact, I'll point to the state of Missouri. The state of Missouri was the first state where the federal government started holding back. They held back land so they could sell it for their own good, and they started violating the constitution and the equal footing clause that every state to be a fully sovereign state when it was created. And so the Missouri state, as you know, with the Missouri Compromise, it was relegated and compelled by the federal government to become a slave state, which is repugnant to its own self-determination. A state has its own determination of how it chooses to be a state and exercise its sovereignty. And so
there's an important point there, though. And for the states with weak constitutions, is Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution.
Yes.
And that says the United States shall guarantee every state a Republican form of government.
Yep.
And when you look at some of the constitutions, you know, Tennessee, I think, has been amended 7 times. And that's because the Tennessee Constitution is actually very difficult to amend.
And what does it take, by the way, if you don't mind going down this aside, what does it take to amend the Tennessee Constitution? Does it require a majority of the counties?
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, Thomas Jefferson said in 1821, the Tennessee Constitution is the least imperfect, and it's the most Republican. That's quite a compliment coming from Thomas Jefferson. It's the least imperfect and the most Republican. So to amend the Tennessee Constitution, a General Assembly has to vote to amend the Tennessee Constitution. Then it goes out to a second congressional session. So they have to, you know, it's got to go at least 2 years, and they got to have another election. Before that second election, or that second General Assembly, that second congressional session, then it has to be published 6 months prior to the people. That, hey, we got an election coming up, and there's a constitutional amendment on the table, and so we're going to give you 6 months to vet out your representatives and senators as to whether they're going to vote for this constitutional amendment or not.
Okay, so does it require a popular vote or a legislative vote?
Well, let me finish.
Okay,
so now you have to have two General Assemblies that vote in the majority to amend the Constitution. Then it has to go to a gubernatorial election, and it has to be majority vote by the citizens. So you have to get through two General Assemblies and in a gubernatorial election have the majority of citizens vote to approve a constitutional amendment.
Right. Very hard. Yes, I would prefer to see a constitutional amendment for a state to require a majority of counties, not a majority of the popular vote.
Probably would be a good idea, more like an electoral college, because we have, you know, some very, you know, democratic large cities here in Tennessee.
Right. Yep.
But you know, other states, like I mentioned earlier in our discussion, that the Tennessee Constitution expressly prohibits judges from holding second offices, right?
Yes.
California Constitution also used to have that same clause: judges shall hold no other office of trust or profit. And I think it was in the 1970s they took that out. They deleted that language, and they inserted the Judicial Qualifications Commission, which is judges now overseeing judges.
So now
what I would argue for the people of California is to remonstrate to the United States Congress and say that the government of California is no longer Republican in character or form, because the United States, I think it was Marbury v. Madison, whether a government is Republican in character is for Congress to decide, and it's established in the state constitution as to whether a government is Republican in character and form.
Right.
So, you know, having judges holding plural offices, the founders were very much against that, you know, and that's why they have the incompatibility clause. And they took out their incompatibility clause, along with the oppression of the right of remonstrance and the right of petition, fundamental in this United States Supreme Court, 1876 Supreme Court. Fundamental to the government Republican character is the right of people to petition. So when you have a government that has a fundamental right, that government is no longer Republican in character, and the United States Congress, you know, has a duty to guarantee that and to either, you know, dissolve the state General Assembly until they become Republican, you know, which is what they did here in Tennessee, and it's why we have an 1870 Constitution. It was after the Civil War. Federal martial law was implemented here in Tennessee, and they dissolved our General Assembly until they came back to the table and took out the rights, property, and men.
So
removed the slavery.
So you just opened up a door that actually, if you didn't know, the ratification debates actually set the parameters, what it would require to actually declare martial law. That is not in the Constitution, but the clarity in the ratification debates is so well defined that when they declared martial law in regards to the Civil War, it was unconstitutionally declared based on how it was defined. I'm not sure if you knew that, but one of the things I need to tell you is I'm at a point now where I've got more than enough content that I want to actually get this out to the air. So what we need to do is we need to circle back around. And so we've had this conversation. So the people now understand who this champion of the Constitution for the First Amendment right of petition is, John Gentry. You're running for governor. The second thing is that obviously there's, you know, another tooth that's out there that I'd like to actually explore a little bit, not necessarily into the nuts and bolts, but how we can use both the common law grand jury as well as petitioning to inch along and pushing, you know, that scrimmage line or pushing the, you know, that battle line back and beating them back by using the counties within the state to actually create a consensus of the people. Because I'm going to tell you that if you understand the government is corrupt, they're not alone, because the media is equally corrupt and working with them in trying to obfuscate. And this is why alternative media and alternative things are coming out, where people are starting to get the truth, and it shall set us free. But anyway, so I'd like to circle back around and talk about those things, as well as Republic Review, as well as what I believe, what I would really recommend as a consideration, so that we could have much of a bigger impact out of the 2022 election in Tennessee, as well as Wyoming, as well as Montana, as well as South Dakota, and how to go about this so that the people really feel like, wow, you guys are speaking, or this slate of candidates are speaking to really protect our lives and our property, and to take government, you know, down into the level it needs to be, at a minimum government level, the way it should be. Anyway, so what this means is I need to have another conversation with you as a sidebar or two, and then actually schedule another time to, you know, bring you back on so that we can, you know, kind of ferret through what we've discussed, because I don't think it's fair to dive into necessarily Republic Review without, you know, you having a little bit, or at least a sidebar, because I don't like gotcha interviews. I don't like gotcha questions. And so what I'd rather do is at least have you fully aware of what, you know, what we're going to talk about, what it is, and so forth. And it's really, if you understand contract law, you'll start understanding Republic Review. And so, which I think you do, which as a accountant and a person of finance, I'm going to say that you probably don't fit the regular, aptitude or personality of an accountant, because you seem like you have a sense of humor.
I'm very passionate about my work.
Okay, good. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but, you know, I obviously, you know, I'm very serious. I'm very passionate about what I do, but I just have this funny bone that I always mix in levity. I always have to have a smile, and I always try to find the silver lining so that we can have a positive charge instead of, you know, constantly being overcome by negative charges. So anyway.
You know, the the early revolutionaries, you know, they used sarcasm a lot, you know, against the British ministry. I enjoy sarcasm a lot, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're very, and the U.S. Army got Yankee Doodle Dandy, you know. I do that for a number of reasons. Just really, I just like to kind of dig in and kind of punch them in the gut, these guys out there, and just make fun of them. But this other part, you know, has me interested about grand juries is, you know, right now, Speaker Sexton, the Speaker of the House of the Tennessee House of Representatives, is ignoring me, saying, you know, when am I going to come in and address the bodies? You know, when are we going to schedule this? He just won't respond. He's not telling me no,
right?
But he's completely ignored because he knows he can't tell me no.
Right.
I don't have that, you know, evidence against him. But I wonder, you know, going to a grand jury, you know, with the county,
yep,
and calling. Because I've already gone to the courts, you know, and then a mandamus, the last time I ever did a remonstrance, saying, right, I want to be heard on the floor. This is complicated stuff. These guys don't know this stuff. I need to explain it to them. And they said, well, no, you don't get to do that. You already submitted it written, so you don't get to address them orally, you know, and they don't have to read it because they can make up their own rules. So the courts are corrupt, but it would be very interesting to assemble a grand jury and make a rule, you know, and make a finding on whether Speaker Sexton is in violation of his oath of office and has committed a federal crime in violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 241, which is any person who conspires to injure or oppress a constitutionally protected right is subject to 10 years in prison and or fine.
Right. So I'll just kind of fast forward you through this. If you have one county, two counties, three counties, and in each county, these grand juries make these declarations that in these cases, when a public servant does this one thing, they violated, they're disqualified, they're equal to being, you know, incarcerated, whatever the full punishment of the law and the crime that they have committed against the rights of the people, then each county sheriff can then actually issue a bench warrant for the arrest of every single one of these people that falls into the qualifications, or the, you know, I should say, those who have violated these declarations, to where now all of a sudden it's going to be taken seriously, because you think that the Speaker of the House is going to go through these counties when he knows that there's an arrest?
A little more history on this right of petition. So the Anti-Sedition Act, I think it came out of Minnesota or somewhere, or maybe it was a Great Lakes state. The Stamp Act. Those were overturned by citizens exercising the right of petition. There was like a million people that signed a petition to the United States Congress against the Anti-Sedition Act. In the early colonial period, British colonial governors were removed from office for oppressing this right. People used to take, you know, in colonial period, citizens used to take up arms when the British ministry oppressed the right of petition. New Hampshire's constitution, the first, or not the Constitution, but New Hampshire's Declaration of Independence, the first line of that is they declared independence because Great Britain was oppressing the right of petition. So, you know, the people that came before us, they were, you know, fit to exercise the privileges of free men because they stood up for that right of petition. And they defended it with arms if they had to.
Right. They were a civil society, a society of laws. Absolutely. I got to thank you for your time. And we will have John back on. And as a matter of fact, when I come back in my next episode, we're diving into the resolutions, the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798, the Madison and Jefferson resolutions, the report and the notes on those resolutions from Madison, so that you have a full view of what Madison basically put out in the play cards of what do you do when the Constitution is being violated. by the federal government. And so with that, thank you again for coming on. And folks, I will be right back after this promo. So thank you so much. Okay, so what we're going to be doing is I'm going to go into a quick break. We're going to have a promo behind the break. And then when we come back, there's just a couple of things that I need to cover that I want to let you give you a heads up on how I'm going to circle back around to the conversation and some points that I want to make, and especially help prepare for the next conversation with Mr. Gentry. But anyway, as you can tell, we're just going into a promo. We'll be right back with some closing comments and closing the show. Thanks so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so a few of the things that I think are shining, are, you know, the kind of glistening or emanating from the conversation is, one, education. Obviously, there is a level of education that needs to happen. There's obviously a need for leadership. I'm harping on this. I'm pointing to you. There is a need for leadership. We need to understand how to differentiate between leaders and managers. And we also need to start really looking at this battlefield in conjunction with a battlefield. I'm going to tell you, and we'll get into the details on this, but there are strategic interests and tactical interests. Sometimes you need to, you know, have a lot of tactical targets taken out, or you need some tactical successes to be able to obtain strategic successes. And so sometimes when you kind of shoot for the, you know, the moon and you don't make it, then, you know, it's easy for people to quit, walk away, and so forth. So putting things into context and trying to talk about the plan and so forth. And then again, when I bring John back on, we're going to be getting into, obviously there'll be a lot more discovery, but what we really want to do is we want to start talking about, one, obviously where we agree and how we can start building an alliance in the state of Tennessee and where he can actually lead, because I think that's what he wants to do. He wants to become a leader. We need, like I said, we need people like you to step up to be leaders too. So you're going to want to listen to this. We're going to be exposing the details. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.